Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
I had been sitting in the ER of Holzer Medical Center in Jackson, Ohio, for approximately 4 hours, when the victim in my very first case as a detective suddenly opened his eyes. This was my third day on the job, having rigorously climbed the misogynistic and bureaucratic ladder at the Jackson PD in a record 5 years on the force. Most people take anywhere up to a decade to achieve this feat, but I wanted to show the old boys club in the Jackson County Sheriff's Office that a woman, especially a woman of color, could kick them back to the Stone Age where they belonged. I mean, yeah, I was voracious, but I had to be. I wasn't going to be a glorified secretary for these frat boys for the rest of my life. That's the path I would have ended up on if I took my foot off the accelerator even once. That's why I had the highest arrest record in the county, why I earned the most accolades, the most awards, and did the best job out of anyone. I had to keep working harder than anyone in that department if I was going to be taken seriously. When I had achieved all I could as a uniform, I set my sights on the detective. I knew it was time, and so did everyone else. The higher-ups couldn't ignore me anymore. I was making too many waves, and they had no choice but to fast-track me to Detective Fourth Grade. That was 4 days ago. 3 days ago, I was called in on my first case. This case. I got the call around 12:15 in the morning, after a 15-hour day at the office. I had just gotten home and poured myself a glass of wine when my phone rang. I knew I'd have to shoulder more things in this new position, but I didn't expect it so fast. Regardless of my exhaustion, I took the call. A motorist had been assaulted just east of town to the point where it wasn't clear if he was going to survive or not, and I was given the lead on the investigation. It seemed kind of ridiculous to call me, seeing as I was a homicide detective and there hadn't been a homicide committed. But as I said, time to shoulder. I arrived at the scene out at Old Baptist Cemetery on Route 124, roughly 10 minutes later. Creepy place, middle of nowhere, dark as hell, and what little moonlight was shining through the clouds above only highlighted all of the fog that shrouded the area. The Old Baptist Cemetery sat beyond the victim's car, watching over the scene. Hundreds of witnesses, but none that were going to talk. All they did was add to the spooky feeling out there.
"Has anyone checked the graveyard?"
I asked Officer Terry Melnick. He was a uniform who started with me on the force. He wasn't particularly fond of me, seeing as I put him to shame with everything I did, and I'm sure seeing me in this position just added insult to injury. "Be my guest," he motioned towards the rusted-out, wrought iron gates. He had clearly forgotten who he was talking to.
"Let me rephrase that, Terry. Go and check the graveyard,"
I commanded, not so politely. With an eye roll and huff, Terry, the man-child, sulked into the dark of the churchyard. I checked in on the scene, and it was clear that an assault had taken place inside the victim's vehicle, evidenced by the amount of blood on the driver's seat and door, which sat open into the road. The victim's wallet, cell phone, and personal belongings were all untouched, negating robbery as a possible motive. That, coupled with the odd fact that the only prints found in the vehicle were the victim's, brought me to realize that this wasn't going to be an open-and-shut case. After finishing at the crime scene, I first drove to Marathon on Broadway in Fairmont for a much-needed energy drink, and then I headed to the Holzer Medical Center to check on the condition of the victim. There I was informed that because of his injuries and upon surgery, our Vic, one Ronnie David Wallace, was in a medically induced coma. The doctors were planning on bringing him out of it in a couple of days. Seems he had significant head trauma, and keeping him sedated was the only way to protect him
until it was safe to proceed with the surgery. There was nothing left for me to do other than going home and getting a couple of hours' rest. 3 days later, I was back at the medical center and standing in Mr. Wallace's room while the staff revived him from his 72-hour slumber. I needed to get his accounts of what happened if I was going to find who did this to him, and I was already 3 days behind. I hoped he could remember the events. It was my only real chance of finding who did this. He was groggy and not very coherent at first, struggling to remain awake, but the staff made sure he stayed with them until he was fully out of his blurred state. After explaining his situation to him in as much detail as they could, the doctors cleared the room, leaving a nurse, a young RN who could easily be mistaken for Anne Hathaway, to get Roy familiarized with his surroundings. I watched silently in the corner of the room, impressed with her continued professionalism and composure. She was clearly in charge.
"I'm Nurse Kramer," the nurse said, introducing herself. "I'll be looking after you for the next few hours, okay?"
"Okay." Roy coughed dryly. His voice was cracked and dry. That's when he finally noticed me in the corner of the room.
"Police?"
he asked. "Detective Valerie Connolly," I nodded. "Nice to see you awake, Mr. Wallace." Roy forced a smile and nodded hazily. The nurse adjusted a couple of buttons on his heart monitor and turned to him.
"I have the rest of my rounds to do," Nurse Kramer informed Roy. "I'll be back later to check up on you. Hit your call button if you need anything, okay?"
The young nurse motions to the call button strapped to the railing of Roy's bed. He nodded in appreciation, and she was gone. Roy turns to me, recalling why I might be there.
"You're here for me,"
he addressed me. I nodded again. He nodded back. "If you're feeling up to it, I'd like to hear how you ended up here," I offered.
"Where do I start?"
he asked, although it could have been rhetorical.
"How about the beginning?"
I smiled. He nodded and smirked back. I pulled up a chair and sat down, opening up my notepad and clicking my pen. I still liked to take notes in an old-school way. Don't ask me why. It's just a habit I carried over from the academy, I guess. The middle-aged man across from me settled uncomfortably in his bed. He seemed to struggle with his recall of the situation at first, but soon the memories started coming back to him with great clarity. "I was driving somewhere between home in Green Bay and my destination in Charlotte, North Carolina," he began. "It was late, about 10:30, 11 o'clock, and I still had a good 400 or 500 miles to go before going to Charlotte. I remember checking the clock at around 10:45 as I approached a sign at the shoulder of the road that read, 'Point Pleasant, 35, Charleston, 86. That's miles in case you needed that." I grinned and tapped the pad with my pen. Roy smiled and chuckled as he continued. "I rubbed my eyes and reached for the radio. I clicked it on and flipped through a few channels, each one with a different screaming evangelist preaching fire and brimstone at the top of their lungs. I landed on one station. It was one of those call-in talk shows, clearly local, but it still had something that piqued my interest. The host, a hard-sounding woman who was most likely a chain smoker, rattled off the intro to her show with a voice so husky it had put Lauren Bacall to shame.
'This is Wanda Wykes,'
she croaked.
'And you're listening to Overnight.'
I thought this could go either way. On one hand, it could be completely crazy, which could be fun. And on the other, it could be something to keep me awake for the next couple of hours. She went through a couple of callers talking about a bunch of local stuff that I didn't fully pay attention to. But then one particular story caught my attention. The case of Dre MacArthur and the cemetery witch. I'll admit," Roy added, "I was intrigued." I shifted in my chair as Roy recounted his memories. I said to start from the beginning. I didn't expect a play-by-play of everything. "She's apparently a legend in these parts," Roy proceeded. "Point Pleasant as the Mothman.
Burkittsville has the Blair Witch, and Jackson has Dre MacArthur. For those unaware, as I was, I did a little bit of digging on this urban legend. The story of Dre MacArthur dated back to 1805 in Jackson, Ohio, 10 years before the incorporation of the city, when it was nothing more than a couple of farms and a grist mill. A farmer's daughter, who worked for the eccentric woman as a seamstress, accused MacArthur of witchcraft after she plucked a hair from the head of the girl without explanation.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
The farmer's offspring soon fell ill with tuberculosis, causing the family to believe that MacArthur had put a spell on her. When the girl succumbs to the illness, the family demanded that Dre be arrested for the girl's murder. She was charged and a trial ensued, where MacArthur was to be weighed against a holy Bible. Should Dre be heavier than the good book, she would be found not guilty and set free. But should she be lighter, she would therefore be deemed a witch and sentenced to burn at the stake. Dre MacArthur was sentenced to death after she floated to the ceiling of the courthouse during her weigh-in. Those in attendance said she laughed like a madwoman as she hovered above the gasping, horrified crowd. A week later, she was burned at the stake in the town square. Upon the lighting of her funeral pyre, she swore eternal revenge on everyone for 100 miles in each direction from the town square. She swore to return from the grave, where she would haunt generations to come. As the pyre was ignited, Dre stood stoically, looking each person in attendance in the eye. Some said it felt as though she peered into their very souls, while others claimed they could feel their skin start to burn as the witch herself began to catch fire. After the flames had died to smoldering embers, Dre MacArthur was finally dead. Her remains were interred at the old Baptist cemetery, which is where the sightings began shortly after. Orville Lee Boyd was the first officially recorded encounter with the cemetery witch, although there are claims of her haunting well before this. It was 1928, and the elderly farmer reported seeing the nude body of a young woman, roughly 17 years old, wandering the shoulders of the cart path outside the gates of the old Baptist cemetery one hot July night. Boyd claimed that he stopped his buggy to help the girl out. She seems to be in some kind of distress, and he couldn't in good conscience leave her like that. After he offered to help her, she climbed onto his cart, where his small team of 2 horses suddenly became spooked. It took Boyd several minutes to calm the startled steeds, and it was at this point when a horrific attack occurred. The girl flew at him with a frenzied rage that Boyd claimed only the devil could possess after he refused her advances. She bludgeoned him with punches and kicks, attempting to take chunks out of the terrified farmer with her teeth. While he didn't exactly recall how he managed to survive, Boyd reported the assault to the police. Just 3 days later, Boyd's lifeless body was found hanging from the rafters in his barn. A suicide note was pinned to his chest that contained only one sentence. It read, "The curse is real." And now her story is used as a cautionary tale for the folks that live within the 100-mile radius of Jackson, Ohio. The warning is simple. If you see the figure of a beautiful young woman roaming the roadside in front of the old Baptist cemetery on Route 124, don't stop. Because even if you survive the inevitable attack from this entity of evil, the sheer memory of her will drive you to an early grave. Beware the curse of Dre MacArthur. That was according to Wikipedia. Roy gurned a grimace as he continued his story.
"That was enough for me," he admitted. "She lost me at the whole curse crap, so I turned off the radio. Anyway, I drove along in silence until I heard the familiar ping of my fuel gauge sound off. I glanced down at the needle. It was sitting a little lower than I was comfortable with. I suppose luck was on my side, because as I rounded the curve, I saw the beckoning lights of a small two-pump gas station complete with a flickering red neon open sign. Holly frickin' Luya, I chuckled. I pulled into the gravel lot, posted up alongside the pumps, killed the engine, and dragged my weary self out of the driver's seat and into the night's air. With a much-needed stretch, I looked around to see a gas attendant approaching from the rundown storefront. He was your typical mechanic type, a man about 45, scruffy, wearing dirty overalls, complete with an embroidered name tag that read Dale in white cursive letters. The guy seemed to be a mix of southern charm and conservative paranoia, with just a dash of white supremacy, but I figured all he needed to do was pump some gas, and then I'll never have to see him again. He pumped the gas while I was draining the... while I was using the facilities. I'm sorry. He sheepishly apologized.
No problem,
I assured him, smiling and all. I was secretly hoping he would get to the attack part of the story before we both died from old age. So he fills up Dodge, I pay the man, and he asks me where I'm headed. I figured he's just making conversation, and maybe he's lonely, who knows? So I told him.
And where were you headed to, Mr. Wallace?
I asked, finally getting the first real piece of valuable information in this case. Right, Charlotte, he added.
North Carolina?
I questioned. He nodded.
What's in Charlotte?
I inquired. Conference for work, he revealed proudly. I work for Gentry Fences and Gates. Top salesman for 3 years running.
Congratulations,
I offered. He nodded again with pride written all over his face until the moments became awkward, whereupon he caught himself and resumed his story. Anyway, he blushed. I told Dale where I was headed, and he told me I'd have to detour from the 35 to the 124 on account of a road closure. Sure enough, when I got to 124, the road closed sign sat smack in the middle of the 35. I jotted down the info as Roy carried on. I cruised along this dark back road for about 10 or 20 minutes, where I grabbed my soda out of the cup holder and cracked the tab. I'm not sure if it was the bumpy ride or what, but that godforsaken can exploded all over my lap. I reached over the glove box and nabbed a mittful of Dunkin' Donuts' finest linens and began dabbing all the spill that was gathering in my underpants like Lake Superior. Sorry for the visual. Roy laughed a big belly laugh, so much so that he pulled his shoulder, causing him to wince in pain. I stood to help him, but he stoically motioned for me not to bother. I sat back down as he hit the call button. A very salty nurse answered, clearly unimpressed that someone might actually need something. As she answered, I noted a small change in Roy's disposition. Up until now, we had been very upbeat for a man that had just been through hell, but in that instant, there seems to be something different. Something that was perhaps hidden under the surface. Something genuinely sad. I clocked it in case it was time to take a break. The intercom crackled to life as the salty nurse answered the call.
Mr. Wallace,
the nurse answered.
What seems to be the problem?
Could you bring me a pen and a notepad? He hesitantly asked. This struck me as an odd request. I clocked this as well. The nurse responded with enough attitude to tell the entire ward just how hard she was rolling her eyes at his question.
Mr. Wallace,
she asserted.
Your call button is for emergencies. This isn't the Hilton.
You're telling me, he said, as a smile grew across his face. He even shot me a mischievous wink. There was silence on the other end. It wasn't looking good for Roy's request. And then...
When she has a chance,
she grumbled.
Myra will bring it to you.
With that, the intercom clicked off as she disconnected him. Thanks for nothing,
He snarled at the disconnected intercom. With an impish grin now firmly planted on his face, he turned back to me.
Anyway, he chuckled. Where was I? Oh, yeah. As I dabbed away at my crotch, I looked up at the road. What happened next seemed to move in slow motion. The memory of it sits in my mind like a scene from a movie. You know what I mean? I did. It was always more like snapshots for me, but I understood his analogy. As my eyes hit the road, I could see the nude figure of a teenage girl standing directly in front of me by only a few yards. Slammed on the brakes, all four wheels locked up, the car was skidding. I could feel the back and started to swing around to the left and then the right. I steered, trying to straighten it out. The car was slowing, but my God, I wasn't sure it was going to fully stop in time before hitting this poor girl. The tires called out in a squeal, my heart raced, and then suddenly, as if by some miracle, the car stopped mere inches from...
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
This girl's quivering body. I don't know how long I sat there staring at her, but it felt like forever. My hands were glued to a steering wheel in a death grip, and my heart was racing 1,000 miles a minute. This poor kid. Her bottom lip trembled as she shivered in the night air. She looked at me through the windshield with a look so pleading that my pounding heart began to slow to an empathetic tremor. I knew I had to get out and help her. I peeled my fingers from the steering wheel, my hands sore from the white-knuckled grip. Didn't matter at that moment, though. I didn't care about me. It was about this young woman's safety. I opened the door and slowly climbed out, holding my jacket for her to cover up with. She looked terrified. As I rounded the front of the car, I could see that she must have been about 16 or 17, my daughter's age. She was completely naked and shaken like a leaf from head to toe.
Any signs of trauma to this young woman? I interjected.
None that I could see. Other than being undressed with a cold night air, she didn't seem to have any injuries. She didn't speak a word and simply stared at me, wrapped within the beams of my headlights, numb to what just happened.
He paused for a moment as he tried to recall.
I asked her if she was okay, and she simply looked at me with these huge, saucer eyes, confused and confounded. I didn't need to hear a word. I wrapped my jacket around her and led her back to the car. She climbed right in without protest, looking back at me with thankful eyes. Big, saucer-like, thankful eyes. We drove along in awkward, tense silence. I glanced at the clock. 2 minutes to midnight. My mind was racing, going over scenarios as to what had happened to this girl. I suddenly remembered and reached to the dash and unlocked my phone to call for help when a small, cold, slender hand reached out and touched mine. It was absolutely shocking how cold this girl's touch was. I looked at her as she sat, bundled up in the jacket, shaking her head, pleading with me not to call anyone. I reluctantly obliged. She looked as though she had been through enough without me adding to whatever her trauma was. She turned away and began looking out the window. I glanced over at her. She stared quietly out her window, her long blonde hair pressed against the glass as she rested her head, the remainder hanging around the shoulders of my jacket. The motor rug that I grabbed from the trunk rested across her lap. To say it was getting hotter in this car would be a huge understatement. I had cranked the heat to rid her of that chill and hopefully raise her body temperature. But it's late June, and while nights are cold, a fully cracked heater is going to warm things up real fast. I mean, we had been on the road for less than a minute, and I was already sweating up a storm. She cuddled into the fabrics that surrounded her tiny frame, taking in every ounce of warmth, with a strange look of contentment resting on her face. Don't get me wrong, I was relieved to see she was starting to feel better. But that didn't change the fact that I found her standing in the middle of nowhere, fully naked. The questions in my head were mounting. I thought, maybe she's in shock, so I took a chance at maybe getting some answers. I asked her her age, and this seemed to distract her from her gaze. Though she didn't directly look at me, I knew I had her attention. Finally, she hesitantly nodded. Then I asked the big question. What happened? Without so much as a blink, and even less of an answer, she turned back to the window. I sympathized with the kid. I said, I know this is weird, really weird, but I'm very concerned you might be injured. Are you hurt? This bit of information piqued my interest as Roy continued. If he was anything, he was a great storyteller, and he had me hooked. I had to keep my mind on the job, though. I had to pay attention to the facts. Maintaining her window-side vigil, Roy proceeded. She slowly shook her head. I detected a hint of something as she shook her head. It was subtle, but it was there. It was melancholic, mournful. I told her I had a daughter her age, and that she told me everything. And if she was worried about talking to me, I had heard it all. This stirred something in her. She was watching me curiously from the corner of her eye. I laid off the heavy questioning for a moment to ease her tension and ask if I was going in the right direction to take her home, and I got no answer, no reaction. I wiped the sweat from my eyes and looked at the clock on the dashboard. 11:59 p.m. I looked at her, sweat rolling down my face, and chuckled. Toasty, huh? I was hoping she was warm enough that I could turn the heat down or crack a window. She nodded again, adding an odd, shy grin. Then, by God, she spoke. She said,
You're nice.
Her voice was soft and sweet. I smiled uncomfortably, touched by the sentiment, but still completely weirded out by the whole situation. The silver lining was that she finally spoke. Are we close to home yet? I asked, hoping that we were almost there. She nodded once more. This didn't exactly ease my worries about where we were heading. She was being very ambiguous, and I'm not a fan of beating around the bush, but there she was, watching me from under her brow with her big, dark eyes, blinking innocently, her mouth curled into a playful grin. Weird, I know, but okay, whatever. This kid had just been through something obviously traumatic. I wanted to give her the benefit of the doubt, so I acknowledged with a smile as the engine purred in the background. Just then, she reached over and turned on the radio. A classic rock and roll station came on, playing Donovan's Season of the Witch. I threw her a reassuring smile, and she eased back into her seat, enjoying the song playing through the car's tinny stock speakers. She then, one by one, placed her feet on the dash in front of her, tapping her toes in time with the beat of the song. I was eyes front, watching the rest from my peripheral. This was getting weirder by the minute, and what was already an uncomfortable situation was becoming more cringy by the second. I could see that she began squirming in her seat, suddenly uncomfortable, and reached over and turned the heater up full blast. The hot air blew out the vents and into my face, feeling, to me, like a backdraft from a 4-alarm house fire. But what could I do? This kid was near hypodermic. She needed the heat. That's when she pushed the motor rug off from her lap and nudged the sweater off of her shoulders. I didn't exactly know if it was a combination of the situation and the extreme heat in the car, but in that instant, I felt my heartbeat start to pound. Things were getting really strange, and I was terrified about where this might be heading. With her feet still on the dash, she looked at me again with that sly smile and opened her legs, speaking once again.
You're nice,
she repeated softly. I concurred, trying to take control of the strange situation and ask her to cover back up. If it was too hot, I could turn off the heat. With that, I reached for the heater control, and she stopped me with a gentle touch from her hand. It was still ice cold. I let it go and turned my eyes front so as not to stare. I could feel her watching me as I glued my gaze to the road ahead. She was very intense. It's not often that I'm held speechless by anybody, especially a kid. But I was tongue-tied. I never met a kid, so hypersexual. I didn't know what to do. It was then that she reached across the console and into my lap, going straight for a, well, you know.
She touched your genitals?
I asked, concern heavy in my tone. This made Roy very uncomfortable. I'm just gonna stop you right there, officer, he interrupted.
Detective,
I interrupted back. Sorry, he replied. Detective, I did everything in my power to be as respectful with this young lady as possible.
Mr. Wallace, I'm not accusing you of anything untoward,
I reassured him.
I just need the facts of the matter.
Roy relaxed with a nod and returns to his account of the night in question. Just so we're clear, I put the kibosh on that kind of thing immediately. I'd like to make that crystal clear, okay? I sat up, paying close attention to what Roy said next. I said to the girl, Whoa, I don't think that's a good idea. Her pseudo-innocent grin turned to a flirty pout, and she pulled her hand away hesitantly. I breathed a sigh of relief and asked how much further to her house. My tone was probably a lot less understanding, but I wanted to maintain a level of authority, you know, to show that kid that that kind of thing wasn't going to fly.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Soon, she answered. The oddness of the situation hung heavily in the air, and I desperately wanted to get this kid home where she could get some help. She was clearly in distress, but something was definitely off about her. I mean, Christ, she was still sitting there, completely naked, legs open and staring at me. I mean, what the hell is that all about? Anyway, I watched the road uneasily, and for a few moments as we rode along, a strained silence sitting between us. The radio played. Elo's Evil Woman rang out its witchy chorus as the sweat continued to roll down my face and into my eyes. Did I mention how hot it was in that car? Suddenly, without warning, and with impressive speed, she hopped into a squat in the seat beside me. Leaned over, and passionately began kissing my neck. I couldn't write fast enough as Roy divulged the details of that night. My pencil danced across the page after page, my hand actually starting to cramp. That was it, he emphasized. I was done. I pulled the car over to the side of the road, the gravel rumbled under the car, and we skidded to a halt. Out her window, I could see that we had stopped in front of an old cemetery. It looked familiar. Wait, was this... Was I... Were we back at the same cemetery where I picked her up? I pushed the girl off of me, and she became increasingly agitated, tugging at my shirt, trying to pull it off. I yelled at her to stop and pulled away from her. She paused, inches from my face. I could feel her breath on my cheek as she panted in passionate anticipation. It smelled like a campfire.
Campfire?
I questioned with a raised brow. I know, right? He said with a similar raised brow. He proceeded with the rest of his story. I tried to reason with saying that I was sorry for whatever happened to her, but this behavior was not appropriate. That did it. Tears began to pool in the girl's eyes, and she eased back, resting on her haunches. I instantly regretted yelling at her. This poor girl had been through enough, but I couldn't let her continue behaving like this. She clearly wasn't thinking straight.
You don't want me?
She whined. She began whimpering, her eyes brimming with tears, her bottom lip quivering with tension. The radio kept playing. Now it was the Eagles' Witchy Woman. I reached over and turned it off, along with the heat. "Something really bad's happened to you," I said to her, trying to talk some sense into her. "I really think you need help. You just need to direct me to your house, where..."
"You don't want me,"
she interrupted, in another drawn-out whine, her voice beginning to crack. "I want to help you," I reassured her. She sulked, still squatting in the seat next to me. I glanced past her out the window to the graveyard, where I was able to get a better fix on where we were, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. The sign beside her window read Old Baptist Cemetery. This was the same cemetery where I picked her up. I had driven in a circle, yet I hadn't turned off of the I-24. Now there was a sound starting to build from somewhere inside the car. It was a low wheezing sound, like air slowly escaping a pipe in a boiler room. I couldn't exactly pinpoint where it was coming from.
"You don't want me,"
she sobbed, a breaking point clearly imminent. The noise continued, growing louder, changing in pitch, pressure mounting. It was coming from her.
"You don't want me,"
she bemoaned. She kept repeating that phrase as the noise from inside her grew more intense, transforming her voice. It was the most inhuman thing I'd ever witnessed.
"What the hell?"
I cried.
"You don't want me,"
she shouted, her voice finally breaking, cracking from soft and supple to deep and demonic. In a sonic assault, she screamed like an explosion. It was a horrible cacophony of different octaves, all ringing out a key all at once. Horrible harmonies and tone-deaf melodies fought each other as they spewed out of her open, gaping maw at a deafening pitch. It roared, unrelenting from her throat, churning from whatever evil raged deep inside of her. Then, just as suddenly as it started, the screaming stopped. The nude girl eased back and lowered her head as a wash of what looked like shame came over her. She remained crouched on the seat beside me, her body quivering. The sound from her belly reduced to a dull rattle behind her panting breaths.
"Please,"
I pleaded, quietly. Her head suddenly snapped up to face me in an instant. She had changed. I mean, her appearance actually changed. Her face had... My God, it was hideous. She was no longer the beautiful young girl I had picked up from this very spot mere minutes ago. She was now wrinkled and aged, a hag in place of a beauty. Her body was bent and crippled, the popping and cracking of her joints audible as she remained crouched in the seat beside me. Her skin turned craggy and decrepit, with sagging rolls draped over flapping, wasted muscle. What looked to be masses of warts spotted most of her body, with some of them tearing open with her movement, causing pus and viscous to ooze out onto my car seat. Her face was twisted and haggard, weathered by what looked to centuries of tortured torment. Her once full and pouty lips were now thin and drawn, puckered like a stitch pulled too tight. Her doe eyes had sunken into her skull and clouded over with cataract on top of cataract. Cheeks that were seconds ago rosy and plump with youth were now concave and gaunt with age. As she bared her teeth, I could see they were yellow, broken, and rotted stubs. And the same smell of a campfire suddenly filled the car. The seconds that followed were somewhat of a blur. Everything moved so fast that the exact occurrences aren't the clearest. I remember her lunging at me, pinning me to the window with a strength that I didn't know was possible in a human being. She bared down on me with her gnashed and splintered teeth, and although I tried to fend her off, she managed to sink them into my shoulder, tearing a sizable chunk out of me. In the melee, I managed to get a hold of my phone and fired off an emergency call. That's where you guys were supposed to come in. But she was fast as hell knocking the phone from my hand, which I assume stayed connected, or we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. Her screams were inhuman at this point, and everything was once again a blur of blind fury, a mash of gangling limbs, poking spindly fingers and vicious clacking teeth. She had me pinned harder against the window of the driver's door, my face pressed firmly to the glass. So much so, I wasn't sure if the faint cracking sound I could hear were the bones in my skull starting to fracture, or the glass threatening to shatter under the strain of her force. It's here that things went black. It's here that things went black. And now, here we are. What did the nurse say? 3 days later? I nodded in response to his question, but sat quietly for a moment, taking in the end of his story. I didn't know what to think, but things definitely weren't adding up. If I wanted to get to the bottom of this, I had to play my cards close to my chest with Roy.
Thank you for that very detailed account, Mr. Wallace,
I finally answered.
You don't believe me,
he replied. He could see right through me. I would have to work my poker face for future cases.
You've given me a lot of information to go through,
I concluded. Just then, a tired-looking nurse schlepped into the room, dropping the pen and pad Roy had requested onto his table, and then laughed without a word. That must have been Myra. Roy turns to me with that playful grin.
I guess this is the Hilton,
he smiled, holding up the pen and paper. I nodded with a polite grin as Roy began to jot something onto the notepad. You know, he said suddenly, there's one more thing that I remember from that night. I stood up, extremely interested in what was next.
I'm listening,
I coolly said, already working on that composure thing. Roy waved me over as he finished writing. He placed the pen on the table and neatly folded his note in half. I walked over to his bedside, my notepad in hand, and open at the ready. Roy waved me down to his level and with some degree of difficulty, and leaned to my ear. With a low, serious tone, he whispered softly, "Read the note." I stood back, puzzled by the request. That's when I could see him holding my service pistol. I glanced at my empty holster. Well, perfect. I looked back to Roy. His face had once again taken on that sorrowful look I had witnessed earlier. It was withdrawn and sullen, the face of a man who had just realized that he was at the end of his journey.
Mr. Wallace,
I called out as calmly as I could muster.
Just read it.
He serenely grinned, tears welling up in his sorrowful eyes. He slid the paper towards me across the table and simultaneously raised the gun to his temple. Without missing a beat, he squeezed the trigger. I lunged forward, attempting to stop him, but it was too late. The bullet ripped out the other side of Roy's head, showering the monitors with blood and brain matter. His body fell limp, and I secured the weapon from his listless hand. I could hear the approaching footfalls of the staff running toward the sound of the gunshot as the scene replayed in my head. I picked up the notes Roy had written from the blood-splattered table. Several hospital staff stormed the room, pushing me out of their way, and surrounded his bed in an attempt to revive him. I knew it was too late. Their attempts would be for naught. Amid the chaos of the room, I found myself looking at the paper in my trembling hand. I held it out in front of me and opened it. I drew in a sharp breath as I read his message. It hit hard like a slug to the gut, and although I had never heard Dre MacArthur's voice, I could hear it in my mind as the words dragged across my eyes. It said, "The curse is real."
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.